This is Channel 3 in Hartford.
Come listen here to me, nobles, ye heroes and ye braves, for I've been at the mercy of the winds and the waves. I'll tell you of the hardships to me that did befall while going on a voyage up the Farmington Canal. One morning from out of this famed harbor we sailed without any fear. Our helm was put hard up and for Northampton we'd steer. We spoke full 50 craft with no accidents at all until we reached the waters of the Farmington Canal.
Crazy notion, plumb crazy. Besides, it can't be did. Even was there men in the state crazy enough to start digging a ditch 80 miles long, how are they going to get water to run uphill?
Perception, a direct acquaintance with the human environment through the medium of sight and sound, is brought to you by the Gem Van and Storage Company of Hartford, representatives of Mayflower Long Distance Moving Service.
It was a vision. A vision brought on by the incredible success of New York's Erie Canal, where the once idle Hudson now is the mecca of overland transportation. If it worked in York State, would it not work here, they asked? Well, there were those who believed it would, that a canal which would provide unlimited transport of men and goods, cut through the state parallel to our historic river, could do as well, was to prove sheer folly. It was argued that a joint-up to the successful Erie project, and thus to the Grand Hudson, was to fulfill the ultimate in cheap, smooth, reliable transportation. The Connecticut legislature met in New Haven. It was 1822, an even year. Led by the exuberant James Hillhouse, the canalers won approval for their petition. That these petitioners, together with others, their fellow citizens, have at great expense caused the country from the tidewaters in the city of New Haven
to the north line of the state at Southwick, through the town of Farmington, and from Farmington to Berkshire County line through the town of New Hartford, to be explored and thoroughly examined. On such examination, have fully ascertained the fact that the various routes thus explored present a fine country and well calculated for constructing a canal thereon.
Simeon Baldwin set the wheels, or should I say the spades, in motion that were to bring 10 years of ceaseless nightmare and mishap and heartbreak for the Farmington Canal. For these men began the uneasy task of building a ditch in 10 years, from New Haven to the north line of the state at Southwick. Here the canal was to rise 220 feet above the tidewater. 22 locks were then to lift the water 182 and a half feet to the level of the Farmington River from Southington to Granby. There, 6 more locks were to complete another 37 and a half feet of lift, bringing the level up to that of the Congamon Ponds. The 28 Connecticut and 32 Massachusetts locks would lift a northbound boat a total of 310 feet, lower it 213 feet in the envisioned 80 miles, and finally leaving it, after the last Massachusetts lock, 97 feet above New Haven Harbor. A gem of engineering, a nightmare to construct and maintain.
Be you forgetting that water does run downhill? Suppose they take those streams and make a canal out of it. Why, all our farms will go as dry as the Sahara Desert. Everybody will starve. Smart folks, along with the fools. Now, wait a minute. You don't understand these canal operations. Now, I've looked into the matter, and these jackalakes have figured out a way to keep the water the same level all along the route, wherever it may run. Of course, it hasn't been decided on yet. However, it is my opinion...
Don't tell me that any jackalake engineer can do what God Almighty maybe could, but ain't done yet. You're getting soft in the head, Patrick.
Well, it almost seemed as if the devil had work in hand that night. For oil it was all out, and our lamps, they gave no light. Oh, the clouds began to gather, and the rain began to fall. And I wish that I was safely off the Farmington Canal.
Impressed with this belief, and with a view to accomplish an object so desirable, we present this application and pray for an active incorporation, therein and thereby authorizing a company to construct the proposed canal, with all the powers incident thereto and necessary for carrying the same into complete effect. I tell you, gentlemen, the completion of this enterprise will mean untold profit and expansion, not only for our beloved state, but for all New England.
"'Twill be everlasting, aye. I can see it now. Thriving taverns along the whole route. Everyone will be coming along and settling by the canal. Land will be worth 100-fold its present going price. And I'll be cashing in. Aye. I'll be cashing in."
"Well, if it isn't old soft in the head, Patrick. Tell me, my good man, and have you conceived yet how them upsmarts are going to take a boat and make it go up that ditch on an even keel?"
"Aye, locks."
"Locks, is it? Oh, that's about as sensible as saying a boat can go through a keyhole as that a camel can go through the eye of a needle."
"Just so. I ain't talking about house locks any more than Scripture was talking about sewing tools. A canal lock is sort of a crib, rather a pair of them, which can be filled with water and emptied at will."
"How? Do you whistle up a brook like a dog? Or maybe you drive them in like a cow?"
"The method is a matter for experts. However, I have it on the best of authority that such a contraption is proven practical in a similar project designed to join Lake Erie with the Hudson. Is it believable that what works in York State won't work in Connecticut?"
"Well, our hearts were filled with love that morning, and we thought of our sweethearts dear. And straight away for Farmington, our gallant bark did steer. But when inside of that air town, there came an awful squall, which carried away our mizzen mast on the Farmington Canal. A mighty wind came roaring on, just like a wildcat stream, and our little vessel, it was pitched and tossed, straining at every beam. Oh, the cook got sick, and she dropped the bucket, and she let the ladle fall. And the rain was running sheets of fire on the Farmington Canal.
The 4th of July, 1825. The great moment had arrived. Ground was to be broken this day. Captain George Rowland of New Haven had mounted a large boat on wheels. Over it was a white awning with curtains. And on the stern was draped a sign for Southwick and Memphremagog. And with a party of prominent New Haveners, he drove the strange craft to Granby, then to Farmington, where it became the center attraction at a mammoth parade nearly 2 miles in length. It was a great day. Then, as Governor Oliver Wolcott prepared to turn the first sod, the spade broke in two. They labeled it the beginning of the end. An evil omen, they said.
Aye, it is. It was by the will of God that the spade broke. Nay, nay, he says.
Bah, you're daft. The canal will be the greatest marvel any one of us could imagine. You'll see.
The greatest marvel or the greatest mud hole is more likely.
Our little boat did mind the helm just like a thing of life, and our mate was offering prayers for the safety of his wife. We threw our provisions overboard, butter, cheese, and all, and we're put on short allowance on the Farmington Canal. Now the night was dark and the air was foggy and we couldn't see the track, so we made our driver come up on board and hitched a lantern to his back. A fearless man, he did his duty, and the wind was blowing strong, and the captain decided lest the storm quit, we'd have to call him in long. Now, anytime, we'd have to call him in.
From 1828 to 1835, when construction was completed to the Connecticut River at Northampton, Massachusetts, the canal enjoyed a period of romantic activity. Pleasure excursions were the canal's specialty. Wood products, cider, maple sugar, and meal actually floated down its surface from the north, while salt, oysters, rum, coal, and hardware sailed back into the New England hills.
Ma'am, the finest cloth woven in English mills. Only 75 cents a half yard. But look at that lovely embroidery. Ma'am, wait! Wait, ma'am! Wait! Wait!
Itinerant vendors with floating stores wandered along the route, underselling the shops ashore and incurring frowns and even hostile ordinances from canal-side towns. Yankee peddlers abandoned their well-known wagons and built scows festooned with flags and advertisements. Some were small enough to be poled by hand rather than drawn by horses. Citizens attended town meetings, did their shopping, and even went to church by boat.
Freshet! Freshet! The whole bank's caving in!
But the picture was not always rosy. To begin with, farmers were unfriendly to a project which had cut their lands in two and drained their bog meadows. Planned disasters occurred almost daily. Embankments were dug away, tributary streams blocked, and bridges toppled over. One farmer who had a grudge against a neighbor made a break in the canal bank and flooded his antagonist's farm. Lawsuits took up more of the canal officials' time than just about anything else. The curtain of time had begun to fall.
Oh, the captain shouted to the driver man, hurry or the storm will do us in. And the driver replied, if it's a race to the finish, then I guarantee we'll win. As he drove the team, you could hear him holler, come on, get along there, mules. But the lightning showed all the worry in his eyes as the storm grew more and more cruel. As I strained my eyes and looked to the starboard, I could just make out the shore. And up ahead there was a break in the levee that hadn't been there before. In a flash of lightning I could see the driver, he was headed for the slide. Without a moment's warning, they went into the water and were carried away in the tide.
Gentlemen, disaster is within our time. Judging by the frequency and the extent of the breaches reported to me, there appears to have been faulty construction or outright cheating on specifications. We can't have it! And it seems obvious, too, that some of the banks have been deliberately cut. We cannot afford to continue damage payments. Our capital is low. The very survival of the canal is dependent upon our financial stability. I move that we ask for subscriptions of 2,000 shares of new stock.
In spite of the growing disfavor with the project, the charm of the canal drew many from farm areas to see this marvel. Here, the Farmington Aqueduct represented the ultimate in engineering, rising high above the Farmington River. By July 1st, 1829, the canal was in use from New Haven to Simsbury. Operation above that point was prevented by the unfinished rebuilding of the Salmon Brook Arch. And there were many excursions.
Oh, the mules and the driver were a-braying and a-bawling, and they kept on a-sinking down. The first mate shouted, "Cut them mules away, or else we're surely bound to drown." Though badly shaken, the driver swam ashore, where he hailed us with a shout. The only one left with a sense of humor, he was sorry his lamp had gone out. The cook, she took a terrible tumble, she was sure she was gonna die. She started mumbling and a-praying about the sin she'd done and the many times she'd lied. The steersman decided this was bad for her spirit, and he sent her down below. And all night long you could hear her crying, "Oh Lord, I don't wanna go."
This morning, Thursday, July 30th, 1835, the boat Northampton went again down to the locks in fine style and passed through the locks to the Connecticut River. At last, the boat which had left Hillhouse Basin between Whitney Avenue and Temple Street on Monday floated on the bosom of the Connecticut. The scene was one of joy and gladness. Who did not envy the emotions of the venerable Hickley, the worthy and active Goodrich, the cheerful and indefatigable Farnham? A salute was fired. The air echoed with cheerings. The band played its liveliest tunes in the happiest manner. The waters of the Sound were poured into our river, and the union between New Haven Harbor and the Upper Connecticut was declared to be perpetual. May it be productive of the happiest results.
With the system completed from New Haven to the Connecticut River, construction troubles were presumed over. And while there was a large and steadily growing traffic, financial difficulties were at their height. Delays, accidents, and borrowings had exhausted the credit of both companies. And the only solution, other than complete abandonment of the project, appeared to be some form of reorganization and a fresh start with the obligations heavily discounted. The plan finally adopted was one suggested by Nathan Smith of New Haven. And that it was so completely accepted was largely due to his personal efforts in explaining it to the creditors and stockholders and urging upon them its adoption.
"Please hear me out. You're all entitled to your money, I know it. Listen to me. I have planned a new organization. I aim to abolish the present company and start anew, but I need your help. I promise you a handsome profit on your investment. You've had confidence in me before, but gentlemen, we've had to borrow heavily to meet damage payments, and we've had to pay on stock. But given ample time, we can clear our debt, make good on our payments, and make the canal a thriving venture. You must give us time to reorganize."
It appeared as though the plan would be adopted and solvency regained. But it was an irony of fate that on December 6th, 1835, Nathan Smith of New Haven was dead.
With the rain up north, the canal was a river with the current a running strong. And the wind in the rigging was a howling low and blowing us along. Why, the captain said, you'd better check your speed or else we're gonna run aground. And the helmsman replied, we're doing 4 knots and every one of them down. Oh, the sky broke open, it was rent asunder, and the lightning, it did flash. And all about there was a terrible clatter as the thunder came with a crash. The clouds were hanging in the sky like blankets, and the rigging, it did fall. And we had to scuttle under bare poles on the Farmington Canal. The Farmington Canal.
I knew the answers. What a wonderful venture it would be. But that day in Granby, when the spade broke in two, 'twas but an accident. No, Patrick, 'twas an evil spell, like he said it was.
A crazy notion, plumb crazy. Besides, it can't be did. Even was there men in the state crazy enough to dig a ditch 80 miles long, how are they going to get water to run uphill? Aye, how are they going to get water to run uphill?
No, it was nature. It was nature what done it. Nature it was. Nature.
A mighty sea came on astern, and then it swept across our deck. It drowned the steersman and the cabin boy, and it left our ship a wreck. The ship was sailing like a fish out of water, and the port side ran aground. And the captain cried, all hands abandon ship, 'cause it looks like we're going down. We stripped to the waist and we jumped in the water and we swam across the waves. We got to the shore and counted all that it made. It only 7 lives had been saved. The captain told us that we'd done our duty and he thanked us for being brave. Though the ground was muddy, it was better than water and better by far than the grave. Oh, better by far than the grave.
The Farmington Canal stretched from New Haven on Long Island Sound through the middle of Connecticut and into the center of Massachusetts, a distance of over 80 miles. To tell the average Yankee of today that hand shovels once built a waterway to float huge boats through New England all but exhausts his credulity. The Farmington has long since vanished into the landscape, transformed into roadbeds for railroads and automobile highways. Many towns that were built along its banks are nowadays unaware that it ever existed. But though the full story of American canals is too complex or obscure to be recorded fully, antiquarians, like those who collect covered bridges, are now delving into canal history, identifying thousands of ditches that dot the backcountry, their strange stone abutments overgrown with alders. We have given this brief account of an effort to carry on work of internal improvement because it seemed due to the distinguished men who were concerned in them, and that there should be some record of their labors. Perhaps it may be thought by some that they labored in vain. This conclusion would be far from well-founded. The Farmington Canal opened a channel of business for the state which has never been closed from that time to the present. The annual amount of business was not inconsiderable, and the income from it, had it been done on a railroad, would of itself demonstrate its importance. But it was not merely in the direct trade it brought into the state, but the very effort to construct the work called for the energies of numerous Connecticut citizens who would otherwise not have found that moment of paid endeavor. By 1847, a strange yet almost expected sound drifted down the valley. And almost overnight, the canal ceased to be. Taverns became dwellings. Farmers moved in and blocked up portions of the canal for their own use. Muskrats and rushes took over the banks, and small boys commandeered unused stretches for fishing places. But water still flows there, flows through innumerable rocks and crannies that once carried a transportation dream, a dream long since vanished into the pages of progress. The Farmington Canal was dead.
Now I've been sailing for 50 years, and I've sailed on many a sea. I've run the Erie from Buffalo and down past Albany. And if I live to be 1,000, I'll be sailing spring and fall. But I'll never again sail a ship on the waters of the Farmington Canal. And now, my friends, it's time to leave you, for my tale's been rather long. But if you've listened most carefully, there's a message in my song. That awful day, I know I saw the devil, and I listened to him cry, "Stay off the waters of the Farmington, unless you're wanting to die. Unless you're wanting to die. Unless you're wanting to die."
You know, a television documentary, no matter how complete it purports to be, cannot always fulfill what only a book-length narrative can. The Farmington Canal, its history, and certainly the colorful story which accompanied its construction and eventually its death, cannot be dealt without, in pure play form, without leaving out some portion of that story. Rather, this television portrait seeks to arouse the spirit of Yankee ingenuity which, after all, made possible that first heralded sailing of the remarkable canal boat, the James Hillhouse, from Pitkin's Basin, Farmington, Connecticut, that 20th day of June in the year 1828. We'd like to add our personal gratitude to Thompson R. Harlow, director of the Connecticut Historical Society, and to Mrs. Walter Ayers, curator of the Farmington Museum, for their kind help and generosity in helping to make this program possible. Our story was based on The Farmington Canal by Eric Sloan, which appeared in American Heritage, the magazine of history. Coordination director for this morning's presentation, Ronald Rawley. Now this is Dick Bertel inviting you to join me next Sunday at 9:30 a.m. or Monday at 7:30 a.m. when I hope to bring you another varied and interesting program on perception. Good morning.